This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the uavdigest.com/GoEngineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. And by Unmanned Systems and Solutions, USAS, a combat veteran-owned company that repairs all types of drones. If you're a consumer who owns a drone, a small business using drones, or a drone manufacturer looking for sophisticated repair, distribution, and warehousing, look into USAS. For more information, visit unmannedsas.com/UAV Digest. You're listening to episode 186 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, looking forward to tonight's show.
Oh, we have a great guest. Our guest this episode is Kathleen Cat Swain. She's the Senior Director for AOPA UAS Programs. Now, a little background. Kat was a manned aircraft pilot before she became a remote pilot and has multiple ratings. She is a flight instructor, and she's instructed both military and civilian pilots. She's flown drones for a number of purposes, including insurance industry support and humanitarian missions. So, Kat, welcome to the UAV Digest.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it. Thank you, David. Thank you, Max.
We actually talked about you, I think, two episodes ago, right, David?
Two episodes ago, when we talked about AOPA's program. We weren't really talking about Kat.
Well, we were a little bit. We were excited. We were very excited. Yes.
That's good. You guys can go ahead and talk about me. That's fine. I trust you.
All right. Well, Kat, can you tell us a little bit about the AOPA commitment to unmanned? What is the commitment? And also, where did it come from?
AOPA is, in my opinion, and really for our membership's opinion, is uniquely positioned. You know, we have approximately 350,000 members, and that is growing now. They have traditionally been manned aviation, and we've been the long-recognized voice of general aviation representing all pilots. So when we took a look at what all pilots meant and what general aviation really meant with the growth of the drone industry, it meant welcoming the drone pilots to general aviation. They are a part of general aviation and a sibling to manned aviation. So it was a natural fit to welcome them to the pilot community.
And I think it makes sense. We all remember, I think, the conversations early on, maybe a few years ago, before the NPRM, about the terminology to use. Are drone pilots to be called pilots, or are they going to be called operators? And of course, the FAA went with pilots, and they considered unmanned aircraft to be airplanes, to be aircraft. So it all kind of fits under those definitions.
Yeah, that's how we kind of went through a lot of the same kind of, I don't want to say growing pains, but a lot of the same growth when it came to what do we call our siblings out there? Do we call them, you know, alphabet soup, UAS pilots? Do we call them remote pilots? Do we call them operators? And really, when we came down and looked at it, you know, they're operating. It doesn't really matter where you're sitting, whether you're sitting in the aircraft or whether you're on the ground operating the aircraft. It's an aircraft. It's flying in the national airspace. And you're a pilot. You're operating that aircraft. So for all intents and purposes, it was one and the same. And they're part of our community. And we wanted to welcome the remote pilots and provide them that sense of community and welcome them.
Kat, did the organization have some initial resistance? I mean, we've come a long way since Max and I were doing this show. A little background just for you is both of us started this show because everything about UAVs was such a negative. I always said, you know, every time you saw something in the news, it was either a predator or a reaper firing a hellfire. AOPA was a bit reluctant originally or uncomfortable with the whole UAVs. how did the change come about? Was it just by growth, or was it there were some people who actually took hold of the idea that UAVs are piloted aircraft and did a little pressure internally?
I think a little bit of both, David, to be honest. You know, when we started looking, you know, we've been involved in various advocacy and government affairs work with the FAA for decades. And a lot of these drones discussions have been coming up over the past decade. And you're absolutely right. There was kind of a growth pattern within the association of acceptance and adoption of the drone community. And when it came down to it, it was, again, their pilots, their aircraft, and they're part of the community. And it came down to a lot of communications with our traditional membership and finding out what they were doing in this space. And we came to find out that we had our members, our manned members, that were already utilizing drones, or maybe they were RC pilots and they had some kind of bleed over that way. And whether they were flying them or whether they were not flying them, they were interested in them. They were interested to learn more about them. So the curiosity level was there. More than half of our membership, when we surveyed 2 years ago, were interested in learning more about drones. And that really kind of flipped the switch for us. And it said, hey, we need to do something out there. We're in a unique position to step up and kind of be the leading voice of GA for both manned and unmanned, and help not only provide the resources to those pilots, just like we did manned pilots, but also assist in the safe integration. Because that's one thing that I think both the manned and unmanned sides of the community are working towards.
Kat, you mentioned the AOPA's advocacy role. And for our listeners who maybe aren't completely familiar with AOPA, they should know that this advocacy activity is extremely strong. AOPA is involved in all kinds of committees and conversations, and as you said, working with the FAA and others. There's a lot of involvement on the part of the AOPA supporting general aviation and other aviation interests. So it makes sense, even if it's, you know, only for self-preservation. You know, you can say that AOPA should be involved in this kind of advocacy work, but the next step is what you said, is that realization that we're all sharing the airspace, and it's really advocacy for those who fly in the airspace.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, when it comes down to it, and you hear it quite a bit, you know, it's a safe integration for drones. It's a vital issue for both the man and the remote pilot, you know, with safety being utmost important for all of us. You know, and the way that we saw it was, we're stronger as a united community. There was, you know, and you kind of touched on this before, David, there's always been in the past this gap between the manned and the unmanned pilots or communities or associations, however you want to call it. And there needed to be that organization, those individuals that stepped up to kind of bridge that gap between the two and to help framework what that looked like. And that's where AOPA is stepping up to help do. We think that we're in a unique position to do that. You kind of touched on it already on our previous work on a lot of the FAA committees. We're part of the DAC, the Drone Advisory Committee, the UAS safety team. And we're also part of a coalition of, we don't really publicize it and it hasn't been really talked about. It's not secret by any means, but we co-chair an organization that's called the 26 Coalition for UAS Safety.
Yes.
And it's made up of the 26 primarily 26 manned aviation organizations, so AOPA and others, out there getting together to try and work out how to come up with the best solutions, best ideas to assist the integration of UAS. So it's not just AOPA, it's other manned organizations that are out there trying to move this needle. So I don't want to, you know, to wave the AOPA flag only and just say we're the only ones out there doing this. I think there's other organizations that are, you know, really stepping up and trying to assist in this matter.
Yes, which is a really good thing.
Yes, I think so.
And one of the things that I had said about when we talked about the after the announcement, I love the fact that both groups of individuals can start working on standardizing a language and standardizing communication. I mean, and AOPA is eliminating the us versus them categories, which is something we've been struggling with for a while. AOPA opening their arms to the UAS world means that people who are, too bad it doesn't happen in the real world, who are uncomfortable with each other because of what they do, are going to have a common language and grow from that. You know, it's not going to be us and them, us versus them anymore. It's going to be we, yeah. Which I think is a really awesome aspect of what's going to, with you inviting the UAS world into your organization.
Well, I saw that a lot. You know, I'll kind of use my own history is that when you guys introduced me, you introduced me as, you know, I was a manned pilot before I was a remote pilot. But actually going back in my history, I started out as a teenager flying RC planes. So I couldn't afford manned flight. So I learned how to fly RC. And that translated into manned flight for me when I became 16, 17 years old, and then grew into my manned certificates. But that love of RC was always there. And then when my employer back in 2010 said, hey, you know, you're a manned pilot, you know about aviation, let's kind of figure out what we're going to do in this space with drones, then became, you know, it's almost like full circle, it came back again. So I often saw in the past the us versus them. And because some people would say, would only know me as a drone pilot, and they would go, oh, well, these manned pilots, you know, they don't understand what we go through and what our concerns are and what our value proposition is. And then I would hear the same thing from the manned pilots when they were talking about drone pilots. Mm. You know, they don't know what we have to deal with. They don't know our experience. And so when I came over to AOPA, I thought, you know what? It's almost like a marriage of the two. And it's that premise of being stronger together that I think that we forget about. We can use each other's strengths and expertise to build that community, to build that safe integration that we need. I think the remote pilot community needs the experience and expertise and history and longevity that manned aviation brings to the table. And I think that manned aviation needs to look at the innovative world of drones and what they can bring to the table when it comes to new technologies in the airspace. Mm,
yeah.
So I think that marriage is critical to moving, you know, further integration down the road.
Yeah. More powerful together than separate. Kat, the position of the director at AOPA, that was created last year in 2016, I think.
Correct.
And tell us, what have you been doing since then?
Quite a lot of behind the scenes. You know, everybody was wondering. I came on board in March of last year and really hit the ground running. I knew the association as a member. I had been a member of AOPA for decades as a manned pilot, but I didn't know the inner workings of the organization. I needed to get to know its membership and what was important to its membership and what the membership was looking for moving forward with the association. So I did a lot of homework the first couple months I was there. I did a lot of research. I made sure that what we were doing was right for both the manned pilot organization that we had and that I was moving us in the right direction into the future to bring on the remote pilots. It wasn't one of these, let's make a quick move and jump in there and do it. It was a lot of homework, a lot of research to make sure we were supporting our traditional manned pilots and that we were doing the right thing for the remote pilot drone community. So I did a lot of research, and then we finally decided this is the right space for us and move forward to provide the membership.
Kat, so here's your chance. UAV pilots, we have the whole spectrum. If a UAV pilot becomes part of AOPA, what are the benefits and what are they going to be able to take away for being a member of AOPA?
You know, they're a great question. When remote pilots, one thing that I see is that, or that we see is they're completely new to aviation most of the time. But however, they need the same support, the same services, the same information and tools that AOPA expertly gives to the manned community right now in general aviation. So I think we're in that prime position to be the home and the community for the remote pilot. Some of those benefits that the new drone members can receive from AOPA is we kind of already touched on the advocacy and what AOPA is doing in that realm with the DAC, the Drone Advisory Committee, and the UAS Safety Team for Safe Integration. We want to make sure that we're a strong community and that the regulations that are in place are right size so that we don't stifle innovation moving forward. on top of that, we're also providing them safety and training resources, whether it's online, whether it's in-person type seminars. We're providing products and services like insurance to protect their assets, whether they're a recreational pilot or whether they're flying for commercial purposes. We're providing them news and media. We just recently launched, when we launched our membership on the 21st of February, we also launched our AOPA drone pilot newsletter that goes out every 2 weeks with great content, news, stories, information about the latest gear, sensors and payloads that'll be beneficial for the drone community.
If I could interrupt, Kat, it's really well done too, the newsletter, the AOPA drone pilot. Yeah, it's really comprehensive. I think as we record this, two issues I think have been out. And I was just looking through the issue number two earlier today, and I was just very impressed at how comprehensive it is. I mean, for something that's episode two, it's really very well done.
Thank you. We spent a lot of time on AOPA Drone Pilot e-newsletter because we wanted to make sure, again, we listened to what the community was looking for. We did our homework out there and we saw what was lacking in the community, and we also wanted to provide those resources to them. So that's why we created that media outlet. Also, we are doing stories within our traditional manned magazines. So AOPA Pilot will have a regular drone section and content that will have drone stories. We did one on the February issue of AOPA Pilot with Measure UAS, talking about agriculture, agriculture use of drones. However, also showing that their drone pilot was also a manned pilot, and kind of played in both segments and both spaces. So we're going to support the drone pilot and the remote pilot in all of our media resources. And also, lastly, we see that it's so important, you know, yes, we have 107 now, but there's still so much gray area in the regulatory world. So we added on UAS protections onto our legal services plan that we call Pilot Protection Services. So we have a basic legal services plan and a plus legal services plan. One is for the Part 61 man pilot who flies maybe recreationally, that needs to protect that pilot certificate, that manned pilot certificate, from any federal enforcement action. So we'll provide legal advice, legal assistance, and counsel if there's ever any trouble or issues. And then on the plus side of the coverage, there is protection for the 107 remote pilot certificate with the small UAS rating.
That's awesome. For someone who's playing in both spheres, you sort of forget that, you know, if you're not careful flying your drone and something happens, it could affect your pilot's license or vice versa. So, and if your UAS is your business and your livelihood, I mean, that could hurt.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Most definitely. I'll use myself as an example. Back in the day before I joined AOPA, I was with an insurance company developing out their drone program. I wrote their Section 333 and supported their drone flying via my manned pilot certificate and my certified flight instructor certificate. So basically that certificate, that manned pilot certificate, was on the line for all company activity per se. So, you know, having legal protection services, and I was an AOPA member at the time, and even before we launched the drone membership, we still had some UAS protections under our old legal services plan. So, you know, I always knew in the back of my mind that AOPA kind of had my back there. And if I ever needed legal advice or legal help, they were there to help guide me through some of that.
Kat, what does the future look like for AOPA and drones? What are we looking at for objectives for this year or goals? Where do you think we'll be a year from now?
Already, you know, we're only a couple weeks into the launch of the membership and we're already seeing great growth. And to me, it's not about a number or a stat. It's about the support that we can provide the community with the resources that they didn't have before, whether it was a legal services plan, whether it was some form of education or insurance or advocacy that they were looking for, or just a community, a sense of community. You know, I'm continually working with the AOPA team to work on solutions and ideas to build that community, because I think that that's important. There's a lot of other associations out there that are maybe geared towards corporate UAS or business UAS, But really, when it comes to the drone pilot or the remote pilot or even a high-end recreational user, there's not that home. So my focus and my really goal is to provide that community. So we're building other online support or communities, so to speak. We're actually working right now to build, lack of a better description, a Facebook-type community for the drone community so that they can, and it'll also be open to manned aviation as well, so that everybody can kind of have that one place to go and connect and find resources that they need within kind of a controlled environment or a shared community. So we're building that out right now and hope to have that launched later this spring or early summertime. But to me, success is the pleased and satisfied member and making sure that they get what they need from the association.
And that's certainly been the history for AOPA with happy members who are active, who participate. Speaking of some of the activities, are you going to be involved in any of the AOPA regional fly-ins or any events like that?
I will. Actually, we are standing up what's called a drone experience. We're working right now on a partnership with some drone retailers from across the nation. We have and have had for the past several years 4 AOPA fly-ins a year, start in early spring and go throughout the summertime. And we choose different locations nationwide based on we get member feedback and see where they want us to go and where they want us to visit. Traditionally, those have always been manned, but now that we've welcomed the drone community to the association, we're adding a drone experience to those fly-ins. So we'll actually, in partnership, like I said, with a drone retailer, local drone retailer, because we want to support local drone business, we'll bring in a drone cage. We'll do buddy flying with drones. There'll be drone sales and discounts for AOPA members, drone education, drone presentations to talk about what it takes to become a drone pilot, how to fly safely within the national airspace, and what resources there are available for them, not only through AOPA, but also the FAA. And other industry partners out there as well. So we have that, and we're also going to run that at the Sun and Fun Air Show coming up in Lakeland, Florida in April. And then we'll have a version of it at Air Venture this year.
Max, are you excited? I'm excited.
Yes, this is great. The only disappointment is there is a regional AOPA fly-in close to me this year, but I have this huge conflict, so I'm not sure how.
Well, you'll just have to come to another one.
I think I should do that. Yeah.
And we'll also be at exhibiting at our first drone show. We'll be at Exponential this year.
Awesome.
So we will be there, and then I will be speaking at some other drone conferences throughout the year. One of which it'll be Drone World Expo that I've joined as a board member now.
Yeah, very good. I'm kind of curious just to get into your personal history a little bit. We see that you did some volunteer drone flying. What was that experience all about?
Yeah, definitely. That actually came about through, I had worked for about 15 years for USAA Insurance, wonderful military insurance company. And I think I stated before in the program that back in around about 2009, 2010, we started looking at drones and insurance. And would it be wise to utilize the technology after catastrophes? Because one thing that we had seen, and also my history as a claims adjuster in my early years, was it's really hard to get into those areas.
I knew why I liked her.
It's the insurance connection, right? Because David's an insurance guy.
Yeah.
Ah, perfect. Yep. I grew up in the insurance world. So somebody's got to have to pay for those manned aviation ratings, right? So and all those expensive drones, I had to figure out a way to do it. So work in insurance did it. But getting back to that, we were trying to figure out a way to be more efficient and also to provide better member service after catastrophes. Because a lot of times it's hard to get into those areas when you're driving or on foot because of either debris or because of resources blocking those areas for protection to get people in. So we had a hard time sometimes after those events, whether it's a hurricane, hailstorm, tornado, to adjust the homes and settle the damages. And here we had members displaced. So we started researching and utilizing the drone technology. Well, back in that day, that was the Section 333 days. So we were the first insurance company back then to, I think I filed the first insurance 333, and then other insurance companies followed shortly thereafter.
We probably talked about that at the time.
You probably did. One of the things that we realized, though, that was back in the day, it was really hard to do your R&D test flying. So since we were USA's based in San Antonio, Texas, we were very close to some of the FAA Texas test sites, US test sites. So we partnered with Texas A&M. And through that partnership and through doing a lot of R&D research on drones with them, we came to learn about Dr. Robin Murphy, who's a Texas A&M professor and expert in disaster robotics. And she has an organization called Roboticists Without Borders. And she invited us to join her organization as USAA and as individual drone pilots. And so we began that journey back in 2013 with Roboticists Without Borders. And then I continued that journey still to this day. So the first deployment that I had with her organization was back in 2014 at the OSO Washington mudslides. It happened back in March of 2014. It was a devastating mudslide in OSO Washington, north of Seattle. Unfortunately, killed 43 people and took out an entire neighborhood within a short period of time. At the time, Dr. Murphy's team was called up to provide search and rescue operations. We obtained an emergency COA with the FAA and prepared to travel with other Roboticists Without Borders members that included the Precision Hawk team, and come to find out that because of situations with incident command, we were grounded at the time. But we established relationships with the folks out there, and come to find out, let's fast forward to August, they invited us back out to the site because they were still doing recovery missions at that time and needed our help with that. And also, more importantly, the hydrologists and engineers wanted our 3D mapping from our drones in order to rebuild the area because it wiped out a highway and rerouted one of the major rivers in that area. So we went back out in August, flew a lot of missions using an air robot, using a Precision Hawk Lancaster and some other platforms to provide 3D mapping to Snohomish County and other government officials out there to help rebuild.
That's awesome. Yay, drones for good.
You know, it was a wonderful experience for me, you guys, because it really, that was one of those, I guess, flip the switch moments for me. You know, I've always been a lover of all aviation, but being there, you know, and I think I shared this with our media. When I was there, I saw a child's mattress out in a field, and it still haunts me to this day because my thought was, if we could have used the technology within that first 24 hours, could we have assisted in finding survivors? You know, in whether we could have or we couldn't, you know, it was one of those things that it just still haunts me to this day of, if we could have used the technology and we had the permission to fly that day, could we have assisted?
Yes. Yeah.
So, it really was one of those kind of eye-opening experience for me personally as a manned and drone pilot of, you know, whatever we can do to really work with, whether it's technology, whether it's regulatory, to move this technology forward.
Yes.
I think it's important.
Hey, you need fast response in situations like that. And the process, the system needs to be designed such that it accommodates fast response. You don't have to get approvals. And
I think a lot of that comes with education, because it's getting better by all means, from where it has been just in recent years to now. But a lot of it came with, you know, not only the, because we had the FAA emergency COA, so we had a COA to fly, but what it came down to was working with the other people on the scene. So whether it's the incident commanders that were not educated in the benefits of drone technology, or whether it was your air boss there that didn't quite know how to integrate it with the manned aviation search and rescue that was going on, I think the education part still needs to be expanded. And that's one of those areas that we still really need to focus on, because I think first response use of drones is so important just personally. And that's an area that maybe can be, you know, expanded and further education on.
Kat, do you have any thoughts on when we may eventually see flights over people or flights beyond visual line of sight?
Well, you know, we were hoping to hear some of that with the micro rule that was supposed to come out in December, but because of the new administration and a lot of the changes going on in the government, that's been pushed. And a lot of that was due to, from what we heard, was due to safety concerns about the technology still flying over people and what risk assessments needed to be completed before the FAA felt comfortable in kind of flipping that switch and allowing that to happen. Hmm. And then at what size was permissible to allow that to happen. I think we're getting there. I think we're that's definitely our future. You know, and I'm not one to say that the FAA is doing anything wrong. By all means, safety is first and foremost. Sure. I have seen what can happen when drones fall out of the sky, mostly from just a research safety standpoint in a controlled environment. But it happens. It's a new technology. So the first and foremost is safety of humans either flying in the air or humans being on the ground. We want to make sure that we're doing the right thing moving forward, because not only just for that specific operation, but also for the longevity of the technology. Should something go amiss, it's going to set the technology back, and that's not something we want to have happen.
Yeah, very good. Yep.
And let's also say that AOPA is active on any sort of FAA reauthorization bill, which directly affects legislation. If there's no reauthorization, there's no legislation.
That's correct. You got it.
All right. Well, to kind of wrap it up a little bit, Kat, for the AOPA members or for the pilots, let's say, who are listening, who are maybe interested in drones but haven't become drone pilots yet, for them and also for the people who have been flying UAVs and have that history, what kind of message would you leave those two groups with?
One word, join. Just kidding. You know, one thing that we did when we created the drone membership, and I get this question a lot, is I have a lot of my current AOPA members calling into our Pilot Information Center, because that's another resource that's available. Not only the legal services, but also we have a fully staffed phone team of flight instructors and drone pilots that can answer questions during business hours, Monday through Friday, for those that are calling in. So what I heard from my manned pilots was, hey, I'm a manned pilot, I'm already a member, but I want drone content. Well, we simply built in an opt-in feature for our current members to go ahead and opt in and get the drone content, get the drone AOPA newsletter right off the bat. There's no additional cost to current members. They can just simply click a button online, or they can call our member services department and we can opt them in for that drone content at no additional fee. For those new pilots seeking a home, seeking the resources and information and support, join AOPA. Go online to AOPA.org or call our member services department and we'll get you connected.
Well, good. Well, that's what I'm going to have to do, because I'm an AOPA member, not an aircraft owner, and I'm not a pilot, but I support the work.
You're that a member now. You are a full member now.
Great. All right. And tell again, everyone listening, where they should go online to learn more about these topics.
If you go to www.aopa.org, you can go to our membership tab, and it lists both the manned and drone pilot memberships. There's three tiers of drone memberships: a regular membership that includes all resources. So it's opening up not only the drone content for the new drone member, but it's also opening up manned aviation, because we see a lot of bleed over. We see a lot of interest. Yeah. A lover of aviation is just that. So we wanted to make sure that that option was available. Then we have the basic and the plus that have the legal services plans attached to them, whether you're a 61 pilot flying remotely that needs legal services, or if you're a 107 pilot that needs legal services. We have that option available as well. And then we also have other resources, training discounts, webinars and podcasts that we're going to be doing, links to our drone newsletter under our training and safety tab for drone pilots.
Well, David, what do you think? It sounds really comprehensive to me.
I think it sounds fantastic.
Yeah, very good. Well,
thank you, guys. I appreciate the support.
You know, just like you described how, you know, your early experience with RC sort of built or began an interest in aviation, you know, the modern version of that maybe is, you know, kids being interested in drones and things, and that sparking their interest.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. Yeah. I mean, I have a 5-year-old that loves to fly with me, and you know, whether I'm going up in a Cessna, and I'm sure I'll teach her how to fly one day. But what's funny is kids are so conditioned to aircraft now in the sky that they don't look up. Like when I was, I won't date myself too bad, but I used to constantly look up when I was a kid and be amazed by aircraft.
Sure.
Now I think we're so conditioned to it, we don't look up anymore. But she is now conditioned when she sees a drone flying, she gets excited about the drone, just like I did when I used to look up in the sky and see a Mandarin.
Wow.
So I think that's awesome.
That's really interesting. Yeah, the fact that aircraft are so ubiquitous now that but drones are different.
And to me, I don't care what it is, as long as it's a passion for aviation. I think it can translate perfectly well in either realm.
Yeah,
so
cool.
I'm sorry, I'm still programmed. If anything that's buzzing up above me, my eyes go straight up.
I think that's all of us, right?
That was ingrained in me when my mother used to take me to watch C-130s when I was 2 or 3 years old. I think it just permanently attached, you know. And Max, I guess we should finish this off. We do have a video of the week.
Yes, we do. You might recall Don Toporowski. He talked to us, back in episode 68, I think. He manages the ACE Climatic Wind Tunnel at the University of Ontario Institute of Technology. Now, that facility is able to test drones. They can simulate different kinds of precipitation and clouds that drones may have to deal with, different airspeeds and so forth. So they have a video, which is, it's kind of crazy. It's kind of humorous, but they have a guy who's in this wind tunnel with a Phantom 4, and he's trying to demonstrate the abilities of a Phantom 4 to deal with high wind speeds. And the results are kind of remarkable. They do keep increasing the wind speed until the drone just can't possibly handle it. So it's kind of an entertaining video, a little bit crazy. Thank Don for sending that along. And you'll be able to find that in the show notes at theuavdigest.com/186. So with that, David, I think that's this episode. We want to thank our guest, Kathleen Swain, Kat, the AOPA Senior Director for UAS Programs. Again, Kat, we really appreciate you coming on the show. I'm sure we'll stay in touch.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. It's been great.
All right, David, where can folks find us in social media?
Well, you can find us on Twitter at UAV Digest. You can find us on Facebook/TheUAVDigest. You, of course, can become part of our Slack listener team. We want you to join that conversation. Very active groups now, both manned and unmanned aviation. You can do that by sending us an email to feedback@TheUAVDigest.com or go to our homepage, TheUAVDigest.com/team. We'd love for you to leave some feedback on Google Play or iTunes or Stitcher. And of course, you can always get some swag at our Cafe Press store or become a patron of the show at patreon.com/theuavdigest. All of those links are available on our show notes
at theuavdigest.com/186.
So I guess with that, I'm going to say this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.
This episode was sponsored in part by Unmanned Systems and Solutions. 30 USAS technicians repair all types of drones in their 120,000-square-foot professional drone repair facility. USAS also offers full-service operations consulting and programs for commercial and government users. Visit unmannedsas.com/UAVDigest to learn more about how to get your drone repaired.